Yeah, so another interruption to our regularly scheduled programming. Sorry about that, hashtag not sorry. This is a really good one. Myself and three of my really good mates came together to record an interview all about clarity, courage, connection, and choice. And we're getting together in person on March the 3rd, 2018, for one day in Byron Bay, an event that is all about those four topics and is going to be presented by the four of us. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation. If you're interested in learning more about the event, ticket sales are open right now for a brief window. You can go to onedayinbyronbay.com to find out more. Hope to see you there. And now, on with today's show.
Marcus Pierce here in the beautiful home of Carly Nimmo with wonderful human beings Bronnie Ware and Shara Carruthers. Ladies, I feel very blessed to be in a room full of women at the great Carly Nimmo's house. Thanks for having me, and isn't it great that we're all together?
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Yes, very exciting.
Now, just for a bit of context, because people watching may be affiliated with Carly or with Bronnie or with Shara or myself, I'm just going to introduce all of us so that we can actually get to know each other. Carly, you are the host of Carlosophies.
Yeah.
And the proud host in this home. Would you be kind enough to share with people that don't know much about you, your podcast and what you do, what it's all about?
Yeah, sure. So Carlosophies is about talking about the stories behind success. So often we see the Instagram shiny kind of feed, and I'm about kind of demystifying that to show what's really going on, because none of us are free from struggle. And I want to talk about that kind of stuff. So that's what Carlosophies is really about. Came about because I'd had this massive failure and I just had never really defined what failure was. So it kind of defined me. And so I just wanted to chat to other entrepreneurs to see how they kind of, dealt with framed failure. So, yeah.
And in this chat later on, will you explain, are you happy to share what that failure was?
Yeah, so people absolutely. Can, super. I love talking about it.
Cool. Now, Bronnie Ware, you don't need much of an introduction since all of us here have read your incredible books. The most translated book, I believe, in Hay House history.
The fastest selling foreign rights book
in the history of Hay House Publishing, author of The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying, Your Year for Change and Bloom, exactly. Bronnie Ware.
Thank you. And Eleanor's mum.
You've been on an incredible journey, particularly of late. Would you be kind enough just to give people some context as to where you're up to and where you're from?
A big part of my message is about surrender and the value of space, and recognizing that time is such a precious gift, but not to fill our time in chasing, that in order to create a life free of regrets, we actually need to stop and be and live and be present and have the courage to actually surrender into the moment. And so for me, I've been on a bit of a journey, well, quite a huge journey, with illness for 5 years. And so it's really taught me how much space is medicine, and how underestimated that is, that the more we can step back and not be worried about how other people perceive us and actually give ourselves permission to have some space, the more magic happens in life and the more we're actually creating a really amazing life, instead of wasting all our energy keeping up appearances or being driven by fears that are shaped by other people, not by what our soul is calling us to do.
And there is just so much to expand. I mean, even just in the first two shares already, like, there's so much that we can talk about within that space. Shara Carruthers, founder of Bliss Body and Soul, and a fellow neighbour of all of ours up here in the... Well, and we're not really in the Byron Shire, are we? What are we in?
No, Ballinashire.
We're in the Ballinashire.
Yeah, Ballinashire. Better.
And there we go. Here we go. London already. Sorry, bang, bang.
That is too good. There's another
conversation starter. Would you be happy enough just to give people some context as to what you're about, what your message is and the rest?
Absolutely. So I'm a yogi, longtime yogi, a yoga teacher, yoga therapist, an Ayurvedic practitioner. And what I really do is I work with primarily women to kind of dive into what health and wellness really is. I sort of have this this thing about the messages that we get around wellness. What does it mean to be healthy? What does it look like? And from my Ayurvedic sort of background, I had this really strong belief that wellness is an individual thing. It's completely different for every single person, and yet that often seems to be different to the messages that we're getting from the outside world. And so I sit in with women and I talk to them about what they're struggling with and how that impacts everything that they do, and to help them to try to make really, really simple changes, things that are easy to take on, things that are easy to keep going. And to get a sense for how that kind of consistency, and not only that, but the idea of start by knowing who you are and then focus on loving yourself, how that makes the biggest changes. And that makes us happy. And so, yeah.
Well, I think the message is that there's a real common theme of struggle.
Yeah.
Right? And finding
we're all struggling.
Absolutely, finding the blessing.
Yes.
In the struggle. So we're going to share a lot about that in this session.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I will share for those of you that don't know.
Yourself out.
We've got three women here asking their story, Marcus.
So I run a podcast network called The Wellness Couch, which contains around 20 plus shows all on different health and wellness topics. I'm a journalist by profession. My main business is called the Exceptional Life Blueprint, which is a system, a really research-backed system, which shows people how to go from mediocre to magnificent in each area of life, and not just one. So many of us, as you said earlier, Shara, we're looking for this one thing, and so many people, either they put all their time and effort into their career or into their family or into their diet or whatever it is, and they suffer major consequences in the other areas of life. So some people might call it work-life balance. I just look at creating mastery in each area of life and being the exception to the rule. And yeah, that's my magnificent obsession, to speak. But I think in all of us coming together, we've realized that we really do see the world in a very similar way. We come at it from different backgrounds and different levels. But I think the whole reason for us putting this together and coming in here and recording is because we felt like it would be great to share those common themes, particularly of failure or struggle or mediocrity or whatever it is, and just to riff about our own experiences and our own feelings.
And to strengthen the importance of the messages we share, yeah. You know, because they can come from all these different angles and different life experiences, but the core of what we've all learnt on our own individual paths, you know, they've become entwined, and so the power of four is, it helps people relate from any sort of angle because...
Well, my story is your story, you know, I truly believe that, you know, especially through going through the process of speaking to, you know, quite a lot of particularly women entrepreneurs, we do feel like we're kind of special in some way, and that everyone else has it easier than we do sometimes, and it's just not really that true. And I think so many of us have this destination that we're seeking to get to, and wherever you go, there you are. It doesn't matter. You know, it's the journey. It sounds so cliche, but it's the journey.
But it's like, you know, don't focus on the destination. Just, you know, enjoy the journey wherever you are. Be there, I think, as you were saying. And that is for every single one of us, right? And as like we say, like we're all here. It's, what is it? You know, teach what it is you need to learn.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's it. Or what you need to master. Yeah. Maybe you've learned it to a degree,
definitely.
But you want to actually master it.
But this is the best therapy, without sounding selfish for a moment, but this is good therapy for all of us.
Absolutely.
And naturally, we believe that there are people out there that also enjoy us being vulnerable about our own lives. I mean, you were just saying before we started recording, Bronnie, your success has pretty much been on exposing your vulnerabilities.
And just being real, yes.
Yeah. Which is showing both sides of the coin.
Yeah.
You know, and so you mentioned it at the very beginning in terms of your failure. Do you want to just share? I'd be curious to know, because I don't exactly know, like, what it was and...
Yeah. So I started a co-working space in 2012 in Byron Bay.
Oh, you're a pioneer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Story of my life.
Yeah.
Just a little bit too far ahead of the curve.
But the pioneers never win, do they?
No, not so far, but, you know, there's still hope for me. So I started this co-working space in 2012 and it very quickly... I followed this idea of build it and they will come, which I think we're kind of fed through Hollywood and et cetera, fairy tales and so on. I'm not sure I truly believe that these days. So I built this co-working space down to the finest of details, opened the doors, and nobody came. And for me, I have this history of rejection, I guess. And like, you know, I mean, we all feel afraid of rejection. That's why most of us don't put ourselves out there. Yeah. And so I threw this huge party. I had this story previously going that I throw the parties and no one shows up. And then I throw the biggest party of my life and nobody shows up.
Literally.
Yeah. And it cost me, we were open for a year. It cost me $100,000, which I didn't have. I'm a very small business owner. It's that was a lot of money for me. And it took me to the brink. It took me to considering taking my own life. Wow. And it was a really hard, dark period of my life. But it led to some amazing things. I decided to... the long story short, the tax office rang me one day. I owed them $16,000. I didn't even know how I was going to pay rent that week. And yeah, it was hard. And so I couldn't see any way out other than killing myself. But thankfully, straight after that, I had a call with a friend who was training to be a life coach. And she showed me this image.
She wanted some practice.
Yeah, she wanted some practice. I know.
The YouTube, right? Suicidal, like, your first one.
I know, total mess. Crying my eyes out. Like, yeah, that was really good training. She's not a life coach, by the way.
You scared her off.
So, good training. So she shared with me this image of above and below the line, you know, where we've got the line and then above the line you've got like love and below the line you have fear, above the line you have abundance, below the line lack, above hero, below victim, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And she just said to me, have a look at this line, where are you? And I was like, not even below, like I was like...
I'm not on the chart.
And it just... It was so powerful for me in that moment because I could see that that line was choice, right? And we all have it. And so it just changed my life. I went the next day into my office and I got a piece of chalk and I drew the diagram on one wall of my wall and I just looked at it and I said to myself, right, how can I move myself above the line in just one area? And I just did it again and again and again. And... Yeah, it just turned my life around. Just one simple thing that somebody shared with me had such a powerful impact on the rest of my life. And, you know, I'm so grateful for that whole experience. So my decision was to shut the place and move on.
Yep, cut your losses. Yeah. But there's a lot of wisdom in this. When I listen to that story, thanks for sharing because I love the vulnerability.
Absolutely. And this is why I talk about it so much because I truly believe that shame exists when we are in things or we think we're in things by ourselves, you know, when we're isolated. Shame can't exist when we're talking about it because, you know, my story is like it's different to yours, but I'm sure there's parts of that story that you relate to, right? And so when you share it, the shame is reduced and, well, it doesn't even really exist.
Yeah. So what you did, which is what I feel a lot of people, I'd love to know what you girls think, is that a lot of people don't do is you took a big problem and you just wanted to, you got one piece of the puzzle. I thought, well, if I can just put this one piece in place and then tomorrow I'll get another piece and I'll add to that. But so many people live their lives just with the big problem. And it's almost like the ego just doesn't want to let go. They just want to, they make that big problem bigger and bigger. And the same story over time gets worse and worse. Nothing, the same thing happened.
Yeah.
So why do you think that people will just refuse to do what Carly did and just try and own that story for everything they've got and not make the shift? I mean, granted, Carly was vulnerable enough to go, well, I'll actually do that session with the life coach who's no longer a life coach in training, and I'll actually expose myself to that, and I'll actually own that, you know what, I am off the charts right now, and I will also own that it is a choice. But 99% of people would never do that.
Yeah.
Why do you reckon that is?
I think we spend a lot of time trying to, way too much energy on how things are going to work out, looking too far ahead and thinking we have to know every step of the way instead of trusting that as we, well, this is what I found in the power of surrender, is that as we take each step and we grow into it, and so we take the step and the next step will then reveal itself, and the more we can do that, the more we actually grow into it with enjoyment. And sure, we've got fear and stuff, but we don't put ourselves in situations that are bigger than our readiness. And that's not saying I don't take risks. Sure, you know, we have to be courageous and face fears. But I just think we can spend so much time on the how instead of what we want, and just trusting in each step and growing into each step, rather than just just placing ourselves in a frozen place of fear that's going to stop everything flowing to us because we don't know the next step to take.
Mm. Yeah. I often say that who we are is a relationship with our environment. And so if you think about the messages that we get from the time we can understand anything, failure is not an option. The devil you know is better than the devil you don't know. We're sort of infused with these ideas that keep us kind of solidly in place, keep us clinging to certainty for dear life. And I think when that happens, we stop trusting ourselves. I'm sure there were probably numerous times between the times things didn't feel so great to the time you finally just cut the cord where you were saying, this isn't going well, I shouldn't hang on. And we all get those messages from our inner voice or our inner knowing, and yet we're not willing to trust them. I think we live a large part of our lives sort of growing out of trusting ourselves. And at some point, if we're lucky enough, we can find the courage to take steps towards trusting ourselves again. And when that happens, it often means that you do have to be willing to step out into some areas of uncertainty. But if you have that trust of yourself, there's a bit of certainty in that.
And flexibility with that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the decision, though, isn't it? It's the decision to actually go, you know what, I'm going to turn my life around, or I'm actually going to close the business.
Yeah.
Like, it's that one decision. It's, you know, you're talking about the kind of the overwhelm when you, or, you know, you freeze. Often I think of the analogy of you look up at the mountain and you go, gosh, the summit is so far away. Yeah. But really, if you just keep your feet on the ground and go, well, just got to take that step forward,
yeah.
You know, which is what you said. You just do that one step. It's like, forget about what's up there.
Yes.
You know that's $100,000 down the tube, and you can keep on looking at that and just go, oh, it's just so bad. But if you do that one step, then you require, you know, that you take another step. But it must all come down to a decision to go, I'm not going to buy into that anymore.
Yes.
And it's just a shame that most of the time it's because the pain is unbearable where you're at. You know, we rarely make those big sweeping changes in our lives unless we're at this real point of pain.
Yeah, well, pain drives change much more than pleasure.
Absolutely, yeah, which you would be a living example of.
Yeah.
You haven't read Bloom and you think that certain diseases can't be dealt with. Just the pain that you've experienced in your life, Bronnie, is something that I can't even contemplate. When I read Bloom, it just drove home to me, even when I read Five Regrets of the Dying, it just drove home to me how much, in the nicest possible way, a sheltered life I have lived. There is so much of the human range of experiences one can have in someone's life that I have not experienced. How do you feel you can transcend your pain to develop the healing that you have? Because for a lot of us, me included, it's not even something I can comprehend.
Well, there's two sides to it. I mean, generally, I'm a positive person, and so I'm always determined to find the blessings in the lesson. So I trust in the big picture that what I've been given is given to me from a place of love to bring me into my best self. So on my strong days, that's what I feel, and even on my mediocre days, that's what I feel. That, okay, on a soul level, in the big picture, this is actually perfect because it's taught me so many fantastic things about myself and helped me create a new way to live that's much more caring for myself and much healthier for everyone who I then interact with, because I come from a better place within. But then there's also the side of not denying it and actually getting peeved off and expressing that, because, you know, there are times when we can sort of mask it and think life's just perfect all the time, and it's not. We all struggle, we all suffer, and so we do need to express that, whether it's expressing it at home, hitting a pillow or screaming or talking to our mates, whatever it is. But but it's not denying it. So there's the two sides and finding the balance between that. So in my case, I'm much more an optimist than I am a pessimist. And so I'm able to find the blessings because I've got immense faith in life. I've learned that faith does bring some amazing things to us. And whatever you call that faith, you know, whether it's you're a manifestor or, you know, whether it's a faith in God, the universe, the divine, whatever, or just in your own abilities. But faith will bring so much more to us than physical effort that's blind. And so for me, I can sort of step back and think, okay, well, in the big picture, I have faith in this because I know that there's lessons here and I'm going to find them. But if I just do that all the time, then I'm lying to myself because there's days where I just think, I'm so friggin' sick of
this. You cracked it. I remember in Bloom, you cracked it at the world or one day. It was like, oh, enough of this healing.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to swear, but enough of this healing. You're just like done with it.
Yeah, what if faith is what if faith is a crock of shit?
Yeah.
You know, like what if it is? And so you have to get to that point to release it. And then when you do, there's this calm that comes back and think, okay, I can keep walking forward now or stepping forward. If you can't walk, as I couldn't at that time, you keep moving forward in your life. So it's about honesty, like complete honesty of expression. And but also what Carly was saying about choice, then you choose how long you're going to stay in that. So I could be the victim forever because, you know, there's been plenty of things that have been hard in my life. And or I can sort of stop it. You know, it's not saying, okay, keep throwing, you know, hard lessons at me, life. There does come a point where you say, right, I've had enough. Enough on this level. I can't, this isn't normal to me anymore. I'm lifting my expectations of kindness and ease. But there comes a point where you make a choice. Okay, I can express this. I can feel sorry for myself. I need to get all this out. I can develop compassion for myself. But I'm not going to wallow in this forever because the sun is shining today. There's people my age who are dying today who would give anything to even live a quarter of the life I've got. There's things to be grateful for every single day. And when you interviewed, it was actually you interviewing me one time, Marcus, when you introduced me and you said that I've had a harder life than most. I thought about that afterwards and I hadn't realized I had because I was so used to taking on stuff and knowing that I was strong, and we can do that. We can keep thinking, okay, well, whatever you throw at me, life, I can take. Yeah. But there does come a time where, so in my case, in that case, I thought, yeah, I probably have had a harder life than most people.
Just
realised.
But we don't know, right?
Yeah.
Because we're living
exactly.
It.
Okay,
and then all of a sudden I've said, actually, I'm not going to take on this. I'm not going to accept this level of hardship anymore.
Yeah.
Enough. And genuinely feel that.
All right. So this ties me in, and it's a question for you as well, Cheryl, or all of us to discuss. But so there's two people. There's one woman in my life that I think is not my wife, and it doesn't sound brutal, but there's a woman that I think is the most exceptional human being ever to live, right? Her name is Alice Hurt Sommer. She's no longer here. She died in 2014. She was 110, and she was the oldest survivor of the Holocaust. And I said, Alice, how did you do it? You know, your husband died, your parents died. Her son didn't die in the Holocaust, but he died young. And they're like, don't you hate Hitler? And she'd say, we are all sometimes good, sometimes bad. She said, I have no room for pessimism or hate. Hate only affects the hater, not the hated. And all of this wise stuff. And I think about this faith that you talk about. She had a faith. She's like, you know what? I could make this a part of my story and it could be the worst thing ever, or I could deal with it with grace. And there's no doubt, I think we'd all say, she's had a harder life than any of us to go through those experiences. But only the other morning, I came across a man called Israel Crystal. Israel Crystal, they have now found out, is actually 2 months older than Alice Hurt Sommer. So he's the oldest survivor of the Holocaust. And they've only discovered this because the oldest man in the world, who was Japanese, recently died. So then they go looking for the next oldest man. It's Israel Crystal. He's 113. And And a couple of things with this. Obviously, the whole faith thing is a massive part of it. But I want to ask you all about this, because, and I'll start on the health and wellness front, because I have a bit of a, there's a bit of a cosmic joke going on in the world. The oldest human being ever to live is Jean Calment, French woman, 122 years, 164 days, smoked for 95 years, drank port wine and ate chocolate every week, right? So there's a cosmic joke. She wasn't raw vegan, paleo, gluten-free.
Love it.
Israel Crystal, the oldest man to this day, was a confectioner by trade. His love was making lollies. And the reason why, his parents both died before he was 10. His wife and kids died in the ghetto in Lodz in Poland during the whole Holocaust. It was because he made lollies that the Nazis wouldn't kill him. Because he had value. Now, some people might go, but there's chemicals in there, and there's sugar, and there's this. And you know what? He had value by doing what he loved, and that was the thing which literally gave him life.
Yeah.
So a couple of things to this. Faith, health and wellness, life purpose, doing what you love. This comes back to what you said at the beginning. Yeah. Health and wellness is so individual. It's not funny, but we have become beyond tribal around our health.
Absolutely. Yeah, this, I love hearing that. That's a terrific story. I think what that tells me is the same thing that the ancients have said, is that there is so much more to our health and wellness. There's so much more to this body-mind complex continuing to move on than what we've been led to believe. For somebody to have struggled in the ways that those people struggled, and to be able to be of the strongest character. So in other words, be able to let go of anything petty, any anger, aggravation, or, you know, any of that, and to live on in these, you know, incredibly long lives. And yet, you know, there's mean vegans out there, and there's mean, you know, there's people, do you know what I'm saying? Like, there's people out there in any walk of life. There is, but you know what I'm saying? There are people who put all of their efforts into making sure that their diet is just impeccable, in whatever words, whatever that means, and yet, you know, they're really struggling mentally. They're carrying burdens of, you know, of hate or of anger or
all sorts
of
things. Well, they hate their job. Well, they never exercise.
Exactly. Guilt, shame, all these things. All these things. And we see ourselves.
Not just vegans, by the way.
No, sorry.
It could be paleo peeps, people on gluten-free, raw, 5 and 2, just normal, 80-20.
My message often to people when they're struggling, because we all do struggle, especially with the same things over and over again, is that let's look in a different place. We're looking at our diet, or we're looking at our exercise, or, you know, something like that. You've got to understand that you are so much more complex than just, you know, just a meal.
It's
or
only one part of
them. Exactly. You can go gluten-free, or you can forgive your parents.
Exactly.
You want to go gluten-free,
you don't want to.
Which one's going to have more impact on life.
Exactly. And so what I really want people to do is to start seeing themselves as whole, not just, you know, a stomach, or not just, you know what I mean? Not just a set of abs or whatever. It's to start seeing themselves as whole. And not only that, but starting to live in that way. Because there's plenty of people who are like, I get it.
Yes,
you
so
have
many
to.
People.
You absolutely must own it.
Yeah.
You absolutely must. There's no lip service. There is no lip service. And you can see those people, you know, who have lived, you know, the scientific research is that that our environment plays a massive, massive, massive role in our health and wellness.
Yeah.
And everybody likes to say, oh, they've just got good genes. And that's, genetics do play a part, but our environment and the way that we actually deal with things makes a really big difference. And yet that's one of the few things that we really focus our attention on.
Well, the interesting thing about the genetic side of thing is that Alice Herzsommer, the female oldest survivor, she had a twin sister who was incredibly pessimistic. You know, didn't live the same life as Alice Herzsommer, had a very different view of the world and all the rest of it. And you were talking about optimism earlier, which Alice Herzsommer certainly was. But from what I've, I suppose, learned, and I forget, I think it was, you guys familiar with Martin Seligman, who wrote Learned, he kind of coined the term learned helplessness, when society just becomes, they just think that, you know, life sucks, there's nothing you can do about it. It's kind of a learned helplessness. What he found was that optimism generally only comes from resilience, and resilience can only come from challenge. So it's the people that deal with challenge in a way that they see the greater good for it, which builds the resilience, which then allows them to view their life with optimism, both past, present, and future.
Do you think that that's a learned thing? Because if you've got twins, it's got to
be soul driven, yeah.
Yeah, if you've got twins and one's a pessimist and one's an optimist, like, can the pessimist change themselves into
Well, I reckon if the pessimist becomes more optimistic, I don't know this for sure.
Which isn't an easy thing for a pessimist to
do. No, but at the same time, if it did happen, then I think cosmically woo-woo-la-la, the optimist may become slightly more pessimistic. To create the balance. Because again, you can't have war without peace. You can't have a peacemaker without the war. You can't have a Mother Teresa without poverty.
Well, can't they both just say, like, you know, the optimistic one just turn around and say, yahoo, let's go. Now we're both positive. Let's get on with it.
Like, well, that's like
saying, why does this one have to drag this one down?
Because you can't have, only have sickness, if you only have health, we all love health. Because we don't want sickness. If we didn't have sickness, we wouldn't really know what health is.
Exactly.
As soon as we have two optimists, then there's really no way to define it as optimistic or as optimism, because the only way you can define optimism is by having pessimism.
Well,
really.
You lot are all just getting too positive for me.
There's no calm without chaos. That's what I always say.
Right. I need to bring
it down. Light
without dark.
Exactly.
Your whole message of failure is that that's the whole discussion. And it's probably a good time to say that we are all coming together in Byron Bay in the early parts of 2018. So watch out for that, and you'll see announcements from all of us individually to expand on more of this. And the big part of it is that there are two sides to the coin.
Absolutely.
I mean, your success is due to the exposure of your frailties challenges.
Yes, it's how we deal with those things.
Yeah, but I also think it's like really important to say that, you know, I've been dealing with this a lot lately, because I've had people around me say, oh, you know, you talk about failure so much and mediocrity, maybe you could change that story for yourself. And for me, it's like, you know, the failure doesn't define me. It's a story that I have that's led me
to. You're not living a mediocre life going, I'm just average.
But I kind of am too. I'm just an average human being. We're all just a human being. But I think the important thing that that I've really focused on recently is this idea of, failure being a bad thing and success being a good thing, or love being a good thing. And, you know, we've got this whole positive negative thing going on. And for me, it's just a charge. You know, we've got a battery. A battery has a positive and a negative. It doesn't mean that one end of the battery is bad and one end of the battery is good. It just is what it is, you know? And I think it's our attachment to it being good or bad that makes...
We do that to ourselves, really, but sadly, or again, no challenge, no mistakes, we do it to other people. So we think other people are right or wrong or good or bad. And we, a lot of people, find that very difficult to accept. So I have this great conversation with my mum all the time. Some people would call it an argument. I call it a conversation. Right?
Discussion.
And my mum calls it a conversation too. We just for it, right? So my mum has this belief that God is in the sun and the moon and all the good things. But when a two-year-old dies of cancer, where's God in that? And I go, well, that's interesting, isn't it? So that's a really... Then we go, well, so only the good things are like the universal, cosmic, awesome abundance is only the good stuff. But then when we get RA, you know, like 48 hours after we birth a child, you know, or we get the publishing contract, you know, 5 minutes.
You could write a book about it.
That's a good idea. I'm not sure.
If you use that example, you can't say that the RA was bad, because the second or the third book has actually been all about the RA.
Which is rheumatoid arthritis.
Rheumatoid arthritis, correct. You know, so it's easy to define what is good and bad, but really what we think is good, another person thinks is bad, you know, and vice versa.
And that's where faith in the big picture comes in, because if we're determined to not see it as it may first appear and see below that and see that it's given to us from a place of love, then even what is perceived as bad is actually good, you know, it's actually fine.
And so is there any such thing as good or bad?
Well, do we have 6 hours for this conversation?
One is like, this is a lot of
seriously.
All right, one word answer around the room, because we might all disagree. Bronnie Ware, is there any such thing as good or bad?
No.
Carly? No. I'm a no.
Oh,
well, there we go.
It is what it is.
Well, that might, that
and
might,
our perception to it.
Yeah.
The perception we attach to it.
Exactly.
Cause some
friction.
I hope it does. I really do. Because if it does, it means it's digging right down to the foundations of you know, how we think and how we act and what drives, you know, the way that we interact.
So then the question is, which people might be listening to, where's the good in cancer? Where's the good in war? Where's the good in $100,000 businesses going down? Where's the good in murder, rape, child molestation, child slavery? I can paint a pretty bad picture of the world. Wayne Dyer, your old mate, said a wonderful thing once. There is nothing wrong with world hunger, and there is nothing wrong with your desire to want to eradicate world hunger.
Yes.
Our life purpose, in my view, makes zero sense. Your life purpose, whatever it is that you are dedicated to doing, whatever your gift or your calling or whatever that thing is, for some people, painting is what they're dedicated to. For some people, speaking. For some people, writing. Whatever it is, half the time, it doesn't make logical sense, because you could go out and get a well-paying job doing something you don't like, but will put, you know, a roof over your head and pay the bills. Won't make you happy, but it'll give you more certainty. So a lot of people generally are just got to choose the side of the coin that they wish to live on, but no finger pointing. No finger pointing going, well, they've just taken the easy way out, getting a easy job, and oh, they're taking too many risks for their family or themselves, you know, doing whatever they think their dreams are, whatever that is, you know. And this is something you write about a lot in Top 5 Regrets.
Are you finger pointing?
I'm finger pointing. Absolutely, I'm finger pointing.
No finger pointing here.
You're responsible for this movement, Bronnie Ware.
I take no responsibility. Where's that waiver? Let me sign.
And I don't think I can do a talk these days without referring to it, particularly around the number one regret of the dying. I wish I'd lived my life according to my own expectations rather than that or the life that others expected of me.
Mm. Which is so hard.
It is.
Seems so easy, but it's so hard, right?
Easy to write in a book.
Does it seem
not
easy?
I'm a selfish Leo. I would have thought you were a selfish Leo. I love living my life on my own terms.
Absolutely.
And if anyone gets upset by my, you know, I'll just share when I'm recording, but when our child Maya isn't vaccinated, hello to all the people out there that have vaccinated kids, I don't care.
That's gonna stir up
something. No, you can hate me and I love you. It doesn't matter. My mum calls me up one day and says, well, don't expect me to look after your polio-stricken grandchild. And I'm like, no worries. Now, for me, that's my mum being my mum. Hilarious, funny, I don't want her to change. I'm not gonna have a debate with my mum around vaccinating or not vaccinating. Yeah. Now again, you can argue all you like. It doesn't matter. I'm not here to argue. I'm here to say the most sensitive topics that we have in our life or in the world, these days seem to harbor very little acceptance. But then in personal growth, all we talk about is accepting other people for who they are.
Yeah, but that's, I think that starts on an individual level too, right? Acceptance externally can only happen when we're accepting of ourselves. Exactly. Because that judgment of, you know, my daughter is vaccinated. Hello, people. So it's like,
shouldn't we be pulling guns out right now?
I have acceptance for the decisions that I've made, just the way that you do. And so there is no judgment to me for you or any other person who doesn't vaccinate their child. It's a choice that I made that I'm okay with, and a choice that you made and you're okay with. So that level of self-acceptance means that then we're not open to other people's criticism because we have a strong sense of self, you know?
And this transcends all areas of life. It could be that, it could be eating, as we said, about angry vegans, but even angry paleos about, you know, all the you know, the environment and the world and all the rest of it. Comes down a lot to life purpose. I mean, when I do a talk, 90% of women are working women, okay? Now, many of them choose to do it because they have a calling. Other people are saying, well, I have to pay the bills, so to speak, but you can feel like they're not, and this is not all of them, but some are very unhappy with their decision. There's a lot of blokes out there that are very unhappy with the work that they're doing. So it could be work, it could be health, it could be movement. I mean, you know, I should be doing yoga, someone else should be doing CrossFit, someone else, you know, someone invited me for a surf the other day. I said, look, I know I live in the Byron Shire, but I'm yet to put my feet on a surfboard. He said, you've got to go surf. And I said, I love jogging, doing a frog pose in my office, and doing push-ups.
Yeah.
We all love different things.
But, you know, none of us have walked in each other's shoes, and I speak about this in Five Regrets, that you know, it, part of it is the life purpose pulling us forward, but it's also, of course, the history that's brought us to this point of who we are at this moment. And none of us are seeing life through the same perspective. We've all had so many different experiences and walked such a different journey to each other that there's never going to be one fit. And that's where that acceptance, you know, the more we can step back and see that, then we can accept whose kids are vaccinated and whose kids aren't, because we're all coming from our own journey with all of the frailty and joy that encompasses.
So you've written about this, so I think you definitely start us off on this. People that are listening or watching and go, I admit it, I'm living my life according to the expectations of other people and I'm not living a life true to myself. I'm pretty much pleasing everyone. Mm. How do people begin to transition onto a script they write rather than a script someone else is writing for them?
Well, face the fact that you're going to die. You know, you're going to die. You're on limited time. This is your life. Do you want to get to the end of your life and realize that at this very moment of time, you're standing at a crossroads? I'm doing a crossroads speech here, but you know, you are standing there. You have a choice here, and it comes the full circle back to what Carly started with, that we have a choice. And so face the fact, let's talk more about death, face the fact that we are going to die. Every single minute that we're living is one day less of our life. We have a choice how we shape that. So take one small step today or this week, make some small step towards doing what you want. And it may only be yoga poses in your office at home or whatever, or it may be going to an art class sometime once a month or whatever it is. Whatever it is, it doesn't mean throwing yourself out into the deep end and your kids going hungry. I mean, yeah,
you don't have to quit your job, go to an ashram in India and go vegan for 6 months.
Well, I've taken those risks and I've gone hungry and homeless, and it's there's nothing romantic about it, except it makes for a little bit of good storytelling to say, well, I've done it. But the reality of it is it's awful. And so, you know, life will still throw enough challenges our way, but there are small steps we can take towards honouring what our heart wants to do. And that means stepping away from the expectations of others, because when you're on your deathbed, looking back, what others think of you isn't what you're going to be thinking of. It's like, did I make some really good conscious choices? Am I proud of the choices I've made? And if you see yourself right now thinking, oh gosh, probably not, start making those choices.
On a daily basis.
Yeah,
and you know, and I have this mantra, I guess, going on at the moment, which is, can I look at myself in the mirror at the end of the day and be happy with the decisions and the choices that I've made, with the judgments that I've made,
or forgiving of the choices you've made,
absolutely.
Or compassionate
of
the choices
you've made. Yeah, because that is right. At the end of the day, we only have ourselves to answer to, and we do have choice as to how we spend these days and moments and minutes. But we also have to, let ourselves off the hook too, because some days we do just want to sit on the couch and watch Netflix, and that's okay too. We don't have to be constantly, seeking down our purpose and taking action and leaping off
a
cliff and, you know.
I see a lot of people who show up at yoga on their yoga mat for no other reason that they're aware of, other than they were, you know, they read something and they saw something on the news, or they read something in the paper or in some magazine that they read about how yoga is supposed to be good for you. And what I mean by all of that, why I'm saying this, is that I think a lot of people are not aware of how much they are influenced by the messages out there, how much they're influenced by how much they're, you know, what their parents taught them or what they learned from friends in school or what, you know, what our environment teaches us, how much it is, it's like a skin that they wear. Mm. They don't actually even know what they want. They're not even aware of the fact that they actually have a choice. And so I think people struggle for a really long time, because we also live in a world that says, keep going, keep moving, you know.
No matter how hard you are, no matter how hard it gets, just go.
And that's part of the reason, that is a large part of the reason why we have to break down before we even get to a point where we can begin to ask a question like, okay, was this what I really wanted? And so all I would say to people in terms of taking a step towards you know, realizing yourself, realizing what you want, is commit to listening. Just commit to listening, nothing more. Yes, commit to listening to yourself. And to me, honestly, like, that's one of the reasons why I really love yoga and why I try to teach this to people. I think our bodies tell us a lot. If we just listen, if we just feel for the discomfort, or if we just feel for the you know, the pain, or the, I don't know what it is, it's going to be digestive issue or something in our head. If we just commit to listening to those things, we don't have to attach a yes or a no or a good or a bad or anything, but just commit to listening to ourselves, because eventually, the more we listen, just like anybody, the more you listen, the more you'll hear, the more you'll, the conversation will actually start to happen, and you'll really start to get a feel for, like, oh, this is definitely a yes. When my stomach feels like this, this is definitely a yes. Or, and you start to get a sense for what really is right for you and what you really want.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much that we can obviously continue to discuss. And I think if you're really aligning with what we're all discussing here, then please do come and join us in Byron. You'll see all the details on this site or in your email from each and every one of us. Is there anything else? I mean, we could sit here all day.
We could be here for hours, really. But just how much I'm looking forward to this event that we're creating together, and the importance of collaboration, and to get out off the computer and go to live events, not just ours, just get out, interact, walk down the street, get off the computer.
Because
as Marcus Pierce says, as Marcus Pierce says, social media is not socializing.
My other corny dad joke is socializing is energizing. So get in real life. Particularly, well, when it's with like-minded people. Socializing is demoralizing when it's with people that aren't really in the same world. But I do think that it's easy. We could do this as a webinar. We could do this as a podcast. But it's not the same as actually
And it's beautiful. It's beautiful just the energy of having audience together, because I learn from my audience so much. Yeah, and we all learn from each other. Plus, there's the interaction of audience members meeting each other. I love that as well. And yeah, so I just I'm just looking forward to the seed of this idea that has sprouted it, and we're nurturing it, and can't wait to see it bloom into our event. Yeah,
and it will be at the iconic Byron Theatre in Byron Bay, smack bang in the middle of town,
which means
that we can access everything. You can walk to the beach, walk to the cafes,
but not when the event's on. You can do that.
You'll be
sit down, please. Sit down. Come on.
Absolutely.
Stand up. Stretch. Yeah. Shara will be there. Stretch.
Well, Carly, thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming.
It's been wonderful.
Really good.
Bronnie, thanks for giving up your time, driving down.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, thank you, everyone.
Shara, thanks for the birthday cake this morning. That was very generous of you.
And
thank you so much
to Marcus.
Yes, Marcus. Oh, my pleasure.
For your energy.
And to the audience, thank you to you for your time, because time, as we know, is the most precious resource of all. So thank you for sharing that with
thank
us.
Thank you. And look forward to seeing you in Byron Bay. Bye for now.
Bye.
So, yeah, just wrapping up. Again, go to onedayinbyronbay.com for more information about this incredible event happening on March 3rd in Byron Bay. Hope to see you there.